right, everybody. It's Nima Vidati of the Freedom Fiends. We've also got Michael W. Dean. We're here on our live radio show. It is Saturday, June 22nd, and we've got some people to welcome, don't we, Michael?
Yes, we have been busy little beavers working on the phones, getting the affiliates added, and we are adding three radio stations this week, three brave, wonderful radio stations this week. KDGO, 1240 AM in Durango, Colorado. We'd like to welcome them. They are Durango's news talk radio. We'd like to welcome WGAW, 1340 AM in Gardner, Massachusetts, local news talk. And we'd like to welcome WLSC, 1240 AM Tiger Radio in Loris, South Carolina. Yes, that's Loris, South Carolina, WLSC. Take it, Nima.
All right. Well, since we've got a Colorado station to welcome today, we thought we'd do a little bit of Colorado-oriented media here.
Although it is of national interest.
It is. It is. Yes. And that's why it's important. You know, it's local, but it has broad implications. And of course, we're talking about the recall process going on in Colorado. And we've got a hold of Victor Head. He is basically on the front lines on the war against the gun grabbers. He's president of Pueblo Freedom and Rights. Are you there, Victor?
Yep, sure am.
All right. And so I guess my first question is, you see this come up on your media outlets, on your MSN, and people are talking about the recall. Why don't you break it down in simple terms, if you can? What exactly is a recall, and what is motivating you to push for this?
All right. Well, the recall basically is a process. You have to get a petition signed to create a new election for the seat that is being recalled. So in our case, it's our senator, our local senator. Basically, you have to get 25% of the signatures cast for that seat, signatures onto a petition, and that'll force a new election. It's an open election. Anyone can get on the ballot, and the election will read, should the senator be recalled, yes or no? And if you click yes, then who should replace them? And that's really the basic gist of a recall election.
Okay, great. And where are you guys at in that process right now? Are you seeing some success?
Well, yeah, the whole first leg is getting the signatures. 25% for us was 11,285 signatures. So that's a pretty decent amount to grab. We've turned those in, and we are awaiting verification. They all have to be valid signatures. They have to be registered voters, the correct address, legible. You know, there's a whole slew of things that can cause them to go wrong. So we're basically waiting for verification from the Secretary of State. We had 2 months to collect those signatures, and we turned them in. So that's where we're at now.
And it's not just your senator. There's also other senators going through this recall process right now. Is that correct? Senate President John Morse, is that one of them?
Right.
And then yours is Angela, I'm going to mispronounce this. Is it Giron or Giron?
Giron, yeah. Yep, you got it.
Okay.
That's basically that's what it is with the Springs guy. He's the president, so that's going to be a big one if they take him out. And ours, same thing. There's never been a senator recalled or a representative for that matter.
Angela's,
so they're both fairly big deals.
Isn't Angela's calling the race card, right? Because she's Hispanic. What is Steve Morse, who looks whiter than the whitest guy? What is he saying?
John Morse.
John Morse.
Yeah. Yeah, the race card's already come out. Well, Pueblo, you got to understand, is a Democratic Spanish town in general, Latino, Mexican, whatever you want to call it. And I'm part Hispanic myself, so.
The white guy could say you're being racist against white guys then, because the non-white part of you, yeah.
That might be it. Yeah, the white part of me is racist against Angela, and the non-white part of me is racist against John Morris. He hasn't done anything like that. He basically is just so arrogant. He just doesn't believe that he did wrong at all. He actually went so far as to say he didn't think they needed 7,000 signatures was all they needed. They turned in 16,000 for his recall. And he said he didn't believe there were 16,000 people in the whole state that disagreed with him.
Wow.
He's the epitome of arrogance is his problem.
Wow.
Now, that is obviously doesn't seem to ring true to me. Does it ring true to you? I mean, what are you seeing amongst, are you getting a lot of support for this? And if so, why? What do you think is motivating people to want to recall these senators?
Right. That's really the biggest question is how did people get motivated? How did you get, because we did it all volunteer, you know, how did people get so amped up about it? Well, the first part of the question, yes, total support, bipartisan. We actually had about 60% of people signing the petition were Democrats, and she is a Democrat, you know, legislator. So total bipartisan support, just because it's a gun issue. Gun seems to transcend everything, party, race, religion, color. You know, it's a pretty cut and dry issue. Either you like guns or you don't, and the majority of people in Colorado like their guns. So there's that, but there's also, you know, the whole bipartisan support is helping us out.
Well, it just seems like the gun issue, I mean, jumping on board some kind of drastic gun control measure like the legislators in Colorado did. I mean, it seems like everywhere else they know this is political suicide, especially in a Western state like Colorado with a long tradition of being gun rights advocates. What do you think gave them the arrogance, as you said, to go for this? And how did it pass? And what is... what's the reality on the ground now? Are these control measures being implemented? Is it affecting people?
Well, they go into effect July 1st, most of them anyway. There were five new bills passed, and four of them go into effect on July 1st. So we haven't quite seen it yet. We got a couple more days. You know, I think they thought they could get away with it because they had a Democratic majority in every House for the first time in Colorado. We had Senate, House of Representatives, and a governor that were full Democrat. So they went kind of wild, so to speak. That's what everyone's kind of calling it, is the legislative session gone wild. I don't know if they didn't think there would be any repercussion. That's where we were going before. It was how come people are so jazzed up about it? Because it's about the only thing you can do that actually they have to pay attention to. You got to understand, leading up to this, of course, for the past six, you know, seven, 8 months, we've had discussions on all the gun bills. We had testimony at the Capitol. We had town hall meetings. You email, you call. People attended and did all this stuff, went through the process, and it didn't do any good. They didn't listen to the people. Well, all of a sudden you start a recall, and everyone's like, oh, hey, they have to listen to that. They can't just delete that like an email or just push you aside and not pay attention to that.
What happens?
That's why there's so much energy.
What happens if you do recall them, and what can you do to, does someone just automatically take their place, or is there an election? And what do you do to make sure you don't get someone who's worse in some other way, like triples everyone's property taxes or something?
Right. That's possible. Essentially, they have the option to step down. They can resign. And in that case, the party, appoints a replacement. And in that case, sure, you could get someone that's even worse. Once again, it's kind of political suicide. You know, if the people recalled and that person stepped down and then you put someone up even worse, oh, you know, what's the 2014 elections going to look like? You know, it's probably not a good play on their part. On the other hand, the open election, it's kind of a hard play for them. Do they back the candidate that is already there and try and retain their seat? Or do they run another Democrat with her and say, well, don't recall her, but if you do, vote for this other Democrat. And then, of course, there's a Republican or an independent or whoever else wants to be on the election. You know, when they recalled Gray Davis, the governor in California, there were over 200 options to check.
Gary Coleman.
People that were running.
Including so, Gary Coleman, I recall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're interesting things. You know, they generally, well, there's a reason they don't happen all the time. But when basically it's reserved for when the people don't feel represented and you're out of options. You know, when you go to the Capitol, when you protest, you get into the committees to testify, you go to town halls, you have meetings with your representatives, you do all that stuff, and they still go against the will of the majority. That's precisely what the recall is for. So they're interesting elections. They're definitely not normal.
Is the system broken, and can it work, and can it be fixed?
I think it can. I mean, what we're seeing, we're also running some ballot initiatives coming up here where we're going to try and fix the laws. The sheriffs have filed a lawsuit to repeal the laws because they say they're unenforceable and they're unconstitutional. So you've got 55 out of our 61 sheriffs have signed onto that lawsuit. And then you've got some ballot initiatives coming up to strengthen our current constitution on the state level. And I think that's the key here. We've gotten such into lawyer speak and where people are splicing and dicing words that I think the way to fix it is to get in real concise laws that are just infallible for lawyers. They can't, you know, we all thought shall not be infringed. We figured that was pretty cut and dry and obvious. And it's not. Obviously, it doesn't work anymore. But I think the key to continue to fight is having, you know, some amendments that are real concise in their language. Whether or not it'll fix everything, I don't know. But, I mean, you know, it's kind of a trite saying, but you got to be on the right side of history. I got to say, at least that I was trying.
Yeah.
You know, definitely. I got to be held accountable to some other generation. I'm only 28. Oh. I don't even have kids yet.
Wow.
But, you know, if they show up, or even my nieces and nephews anyway, if they say, hey, what were you doing when we were losing all our rights? I got to be accountable and say, well, I was trying. We were doing recalls. We were trying to amend laws. You know, I don't think it's ever totally gone. Don't give up the ship sort of attitude, you know.
Well, thank you for your service on this. Another question that I have is the opposition being funded by national anti-gun organizations? Are you being funded by any national pro-gun organizations? And how is this national? I know it's national news, but what are the national implications of which, either way this goes in Colorado?
We're not being funded by any group, anything, not even local. It's all volunteer. Everything has been, all the money we've raised has been from individuals, a couple local businesses, but NRA, Rocky Mountain Gun Owners, Gun Owners of America, no one has helped us yet. Not to say that they, you know, don't support us. They
if you succeed, the NRA will get behind you and make it look like they did it. That's my prediction.
Right. Well, precisely. And we've already kind of even had those conversations that they didn't think we could do it. They didn't want to have their name on a failed recall. But now that it looks like it's going to be successful, they're all starting to pique their interest.
They'll write a letter. They'll write a letter to a sheriff in your honor. And then if it fails, they'll forget it happened. And if it passes, they'll do a 4-page article about how they made it happen. That's my experience at the NRA.
Right. So we're running just on shoestring budget. I mean, it's been all local, some out-of-state money from our online donation, from our website and stuff like that, of course, but it's all individuals, you know, less than a couple $100 here and there. Her money, and this is all open campaign finance record. That's why I'm not, you know, ashamed
to share it. We'll actually get to her money in just a little bit, Victor. We've got to go to the market here, so go ahead and hold on.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
A science fiction comic adventure from Big Head Press. Quantum Vibe. It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. Quantum Vibe. There's a robot girl and zany creatures made with genetically engineered features, and corporate villains crave the opportunity to steal a profit from mother's ingenuity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
right, welcome back, Freedom Fiends. It is our Saturday live show. I'm Nima Vedati. We've also got Michael W. Dean. And with us today is our special guest, Victor Head. He's been heading, so to speak, the fight against the gun controller, the gun-controlling legislators in Colorado. And he was telling us before the break that, you know, this is a real grassroots thing on his part and all the people over there in Colorado calling for the recall. There's no Koch Brothers funding or anything like that, or the NRA hasn't even really stepped on board. But that's not really the case for the legislators, is it? They're actually getting some outside help. Is that right, Victor?
That's right. Basically all the campaign finance records are open records to the public. So we're not shameful about saying private individuals have donated, and we've made to the tune of $20,000-$25,000 that we've spent on advertising, billboards, radio ads, things like that. As soon as this started, both her and Morris had groups created to defend them from the recalls. They both received identical donations from a big Washington, D.C. group and two big Denver groups. Combined three groups donated $70,000 to both of them.
Right.
So
right.
Total outside money. Yeah.
Right. And to me, Michael was asking earlier, you know, what are the national implications? But I guess in my head, it's mostly this was sort of the first post Sandy Hook state gun control laws that were but they were very invasive. They were the gun control laws that people worry about. And, you know, how Colorado goes is a really interesting case study. We'll see if other states get brave enough to go ahead and pass some more of these if it goes unanswered. Tell us a little bit about the gun control measures themselves, and what to you and to the average person in Colorado that's upset about this, what sticks out as the bad things that the legislature did with regard to gun control?
Well, that's a big question we had. People would come up and ask, you know, how is this really going to affect me in my day-to-day life? The background check bill, that's how they touted as, oh, just background checks for everyone. The problem is they had to identify when a transfer occurs. When do you need a background check? Of course, everyone generally agrees when you sell a gun or something to that effect. The problem is you have to define between selling, loaning, gifting, and basically it ends up that right now, the way they passed this law, 72-hour transfers are maximum on any loaning period, even within own family, friends, you know, your mom, your girlfriend, parents, whatever. Anything over 72 hours requires a background check, even within your own home. So essentially, if you leave town for a week and you leave a gun with your wife, that's illegal. You need to do a background check on your wife to leave her a gun. And that's flat out. I mean, that, you know, this isn't propaganda. That is how the law reads. It's very simple.
There's a guy.
Another one is the magazine ban. Same thing. If it's just, you banned magazines, that's it. The problem was they added a readily convertible clause, and it said any mag, they banned them to 15 rounds here, but any mag that is readily convertible to more than 15 rounds. Well, that includes things like shotguns, where you can just screw on a tube extension and you extend it out to whatever. It's readily convertible. Anything with a removable base plate, essentially, where you can put an extender on. Well, any gun guy knows that that's essentially every semi-auto pistol in existence. And it's illegal to ever transfer those temporarily at a gun range, in defense, in your own home. That's it. So if I want to leave my Glock that holds 16 rounds on the nightstand, I'm the only one that is ever allowed to touch that because it has a high-capacity magazine. And when you die, apparently you're supposed to call the police and they're going to come round them up and take them from you. You're never allowed to gift them or do anything. So they're pretty invasive. People don't realize it yet. I think we've got to wait another week or two for July 1st when they actually go into effect. But they're pretty invasive.
Can people outside the state help you financially and otherwise? And if so, how can they do that?
Absolutely. We've got a website, PuebloFreedomAndRights.org. You can also just search for the, you know, Colorado recalls. Our name tends to pop up there. But PuebloFreedomAndRights.org, we've got a donation there. That's the biggest thing we need because we're already in court. They've already accused us of campaign finance violations, and the petition language they're saying is not correct. And so we've already got court dates, and the lawyers are expensive, and that's really the rub of it. It's unfortunate that we can't exercise our rights and just have a new election and recall an official without hiring lawyers and paying tens of thousands of dollars, but that is what it is. And so that's the real help anyone can give.
Thank you so much for your time here, Victor, and we appreciate all that you're doing. We thank you for your service, as Michael said, and keep fighting the good fight. I think it's just amazing that you're a 28-year-old and you get it so much and you're actually doing something about it rather than just complaining. So kudos to you, sir.
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and go to the market. We'll see you Freedom Fiends after a short while. Thanks for sticking with us.
Howdy, I'm Ben Stone from the Bad Quaker Podcast. I'll teach you the difference between the government and the state, why the government is nothing without the state, and how to dissolve the state while remaining peaceful and even calm. I knew the state was a losing proposition decades before that was cool. Check out the Bad Quaker Podcast at badquaker.com. We have a forum and it's got gardening tips. That's badquaker.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
All right, folks, welcome back. This is Freedom Fiends Live. Yeah. It is Saturday, June 22nd. You know me, I'm representing that Austin, Texas. My name is Nima Vidotti. We've also got Michael W. Dean out there. Where are you at, Michael?
This is Michael Dean. I'm broadcasting from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west of Wyoming, basically in Beast Lick, Wyoming, which is named for the fact that in my town of Beast Lick, there are many natural salt formations, and the antelope and bison come out and use them as salt licks. It's Beast Lick, Wyoming.
Yes, yes.
And that's
not
my story.
Not as funny as Giant Bone Lick, but we'll go with it.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Is there a place called Giant Bone Lick?
Yeah, or Mammoth Bone Lick or something like that. It's an actual salt lick from back in the day that has a lot of fossils because that's soft wow. ground and salt licks. And it's, I think it's, let's see, let me Google it, Giant Bone Lick. I would like to go there just for the photo ops.
Well, you know, Wyoming has...
It's Big Bone Lick. My bad, I misspoke.
Wyoming has more dinosaur bones than any other state. Wyoming and Utah, actually.
In Utah. I was going to say yeah. Utah, yeah, because growing up in Utah, I remember we went to some dinosaur park and hearing about how Utah is the dino state or stuff like that.
Is that why people here want to go back to the way it used to be when things were good so much?
It's a state full of dinosaurs, I guess.
I mean, you know, if you want to take it to like, well, I want to go back to when America was good. I'm thinking like, was it ever good? Because, you know, George Washington was killing Americans for not paying taxes right after the ink was dry on the Constitution. So I guess to go back to where it was good, you'd have to go back to woolly mammoths, which were what? 7,000 years ago. I mean, woolly mammoths were not dinosaurs. People think, you know, they were dinosaurs. There were people were like writing things down. There was language, even written language, when woolly mammoths were around. Did you know that?
Well, no, I guess not particularly, no. But yeah. I do like Ben Stone's take that there were people in Appalachia who had migrated there and basically just lived without worrying about the politics that were going on in the East Coast and sort of lived a free life, you know, in a lot of cases. The United States was never really a monolith, at least in those times, because there wasn't a giant surveillance state like the NSA and there wasn't a telescreen and Xbox One to keep its eye on you 24/7. So yeah, there were people that probably never cared or encountered the state goons.
People were isolated by mountains that were really hard to get into. And, you know, of course, the way the state responded and the media and the tea sipping people, the people who raised their pinky when they sipped tea in Boston and San Francisco and Chicago and Detroit. Well, not Detroit, but in those civilized places, you know, the way they responded was basically racism by saying those inbred white people, they're all a bunch of hicks because they don't do it our way. And you gotta
use the posh accent, not the country accent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, you try it. Yes. Oh, I do. Hey, you have to do
it. I never.
Yeah. What's it called? Long Island Lockjaw is the name of that that accent.
I really believe that. Yes,
and you know, you can put a little bit of Boston accent in there and turn it into the Kennedys. I did not have sex with that prostitute, which is a Simpsons reference, if anyone's asking or shocked. And we don't want to shock anybody. We are a very mellow talk show here on the Freedom Fiends. But yeah, there was a lot of racism against white people. There's actually a really good book that I would recommend. It's called The Redneck Manifesto by Jim Goad. And it's really funny and it's really right on. And it's not racist. It's been accused of that. But it's basically, its whole premise is that rural white people are the only people it's okay to be racist about anymore. And if you think about it, you know, a lot of the jokes in comedy, even by comedians, like, you know, the redneck comedians, and it's okay, I guess, because they're doing it. But anybody else can do it and make fun of rural white people. And if you substituted any other ethnic or social group for the word redneck in what they're saying, those people would be kicked off the air. And it's just another kind of collectivism.
I would argue that might have been true in the pre-Islamophobia stage that we're in now. I mean, now it's okay to say that, well, people live across the ocean and they're brown and they're Muslim, then it's okay. They're not really people. You can make fun of them. You can murder them. You can do whatever you want to them. Nobody really cares.
You know what's weird? The slang for Middle Easterners that's used in the U.S. military is Haji. And Haji. As far as I know, Haji was the name of the little boy from India on that 70s cartoon show. What was it?
It's, yeah.
With Dr. Race Bannon. I can't remember the name of it, but it was actually Archer, the show Archer that we
wasn't
liked.
It, wasn't
so
it Johnny something?
Johnny Quest. Johnny yeah, something. Johnny Quest.
Johnny Quest.
Yeah, Haji was an Indian boy. So basically, if you're calling someone from the Middle East Haji, you're being racist because you're confusing, you know, one head-wrapped people with another head-wrapped people and saying they're all the same. I guess I just made fun of real people by saying they're all the same. But that's actually a voice I use a lot. It doesn't really mean anything. Because I'm from
one of the interesting
I'm from the least. My state, my giant state of Wyoming, has less people than, like, you know, Stockton, California, which no one's ever heard of. So, I'm as rural as it gets, man.
One of the interesting points I hear Scott Horton bring up occasionally is how do those Islamophobes feel about the Arab Christians in Iraq and so forth, and in Syria, the Coptic Christians that suffer just as much from American foreign policy that a lot of Islamophobes would totally get on board with and be like, yeah, kill them, Mirka. You know, some of the original lineages of Christians are being kicked out and forced to be refugees or are dying in explosions due in large part to American foreign policy. How do they make that sync up in their head and still be okay with it?
Well, or Palestine, you know, considering everyone in Palestine bad and it's okay to back Israel, blowing them up. And it's like, Palestine is the cradle of Christianity, you know, and it is, there's spots in Palestine that are considered holy land, the same spot that's considered a holy land in all three of the monotheistic, you know, in Judaism, right, Christianity, and Islam.
And there was a large contingent or population of Christians there, too, that have basically left because they don't want to be living inside of these Warsaw ghetto type areas that the Gaza Strip is. They don't want to live in those kinds of conditions just because they happen to have been born there. So, there used to be a population of Christians in that area and not so much anymore. But how fair is it that they had to get kicked out of their home just because they were born there? You know?
Yeah, I mean, I would ask, who would Christ drone? To any Christian who thinks it's good to be, you know, just randomly blowing people up because of their birthplace.
Yeah.
It's not good.
And to bring it, I guess, back a little closer to home once again, Victor Head, we were talking to him in the previous two segments. He's kind of doing it right, you know, in a large part. Recall.
Nice
that's
segue. Nice segue.
Yeah. Well, we had to get on it eventually. And,
yeah.
You know. But okay, so there's the gun control stuff going on in Colorado, like he explained, some pretty invasive stuff, and there's gun manufacturers, a lot of them in Colorado, that are trying to figure out what to do next, and Hi-Vis Shooting Systems is apparently trying to move to Wyoming. Now, you were wondering a few episodes back, when are Colorado gun companies going to start moving to Wyoming that has stuff like the Wyoming Firearms Freedom Act?
I predicted
you
it.
You did. But they're doing it a little bit wrong here. They're asking for a $600,000 loan from the Laramie City Council and a $2.5 million grant to help the company move from Colorado to Laramie.
I would say that it's not good conservatism, and gun owners are always saying what great conservatives they are. That is asking for welfare, a huge welfare handout. Now, the way they should do it if they want to do it right is ask for a tax break, because if you're asking for a welfare handout from a government to move somewhere, you're basically saying, we want you to point guns at your citizens' heads and steal money. And when we say that, to explain that to someone who hasn't heard that concept, it's basically taxation is theft, and it's enforced at the barrel of a gun. Now, if you don't think, you're like, oh, I've never had a gun pointed at me. If you don't pay your taxes, they will send a letter to you. If you ignore the letter, they will send some little pencil neck bureaucrat over to your house with a clipboard. If you slam the door on him, they will come back with men with guns. If you ignore the men with the guns or resist them when they try to take your property, take your house that you own, they will shoot you. So taxes are directly enforced at the barrel of a gun. So this gun company,
and this is one of those crimes that that rich people don't get a pass on. People like to point to O.J. Simpson and other rich people and say, oh, well, if rich people commit crimes, you know, they'll hire an expensive lawyer and they won't go to jail. But if you're Wesley Snipes or Lauryn Hill, you will get the gun pointed at you and you will get thrown in jail. There are lots. If you're Irwin Schiff, you'll get thrown in jail. There are people out there that have means, but you can't take on the state. You fight the state will win.
Every time. Yeah, and I would say that what should this company should do that would be ethical is ask for a tax break in exchange for moving their operations here, which is, instead of point guns at people and steal money and give it to us, it's saying, don't point as many guns at us. And that would be working within the confines of the state and how you can't escape the state. That would be the ethical solution.
And also working within the confines of the non-aggression principle.
Yeah.
Tax breaks, all libertarians worth their salt should be on board with tax breaks. And you have a lot of people, you know, in the Occupy movement and sort of on the leftish part of the spectrum saying, you know, complaining about companies that don't pay taxes and they should pay their fair share. And look at these giant corporations that aren't being taxed. Well, good for them. You know, none of us should be taxed. They found a way to make it happen.
You know, what's really funny is a lot of leftists who are all screaming about everyone should pay their fair share on taxes really like starting 501c3 non-taxed, you know, tax free exempt groups. And I don't have a problem with that. And I actually did something under the banner of an organization. My DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist movie was done through a 501c3 umbrella group, and we raised funding and didn't pay taxes on it. And my only objection to the reason I'd never do that again is because it involves a lot of telling the government what you're doing and following government regulations instead of just doing your art. It really complicates art.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a big problem with a lot of the state regulations in anything, is spending so much time being compliant. You know, I've heard people talk about how many man hours, and there's studies about how many man hours you need just to maintain compliance. And if you're a company that sells nationally or internationally, it's a few full-time positions and a few full-time salaries you have to end up paying just to do that.
It's buildings full of people if it's a big company.
Yeah, depending on the size of the company, of course.
And as far as people are doing it right, someone who's doing it very interestingly, Mike Vandenbaugh, who we're going to be interviewing on the 30th, Sunday the 30th, is planning on spending his July 4th coming from Alabama to Colorado and openly smuggling a bunch of 30-round mags and giving them away on the state capitol steps.
Right. There was a poster saying, you know, the Freedom airdrop that was going to be dropping 30-round mags into Colorado. I think it was just a joke, but no. I guess it's come to fruition. And we'll be back after this trip to the market.
Yeah, on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, Inoculation from Indoctrination. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Anarchy Gumbo, Guns and Weed, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons. Freedom Fiends.
Yeah, it's Freedom Fiends. Not only that, but it's the Freedom Fiends live. It is Saturday, June 22nd. The last segment of hour one. I'm Nima Vedati, talking to you from Austin, Texas. We've also got Michael W. Dean. What's up, man?
It's Michael W. Dean broadcasting from a windowless bunker in rural Wyoming, where the antelope, where the deer and the antelope play, like in the song. And in our first segment, our first hour here, first half hour of our first hour, we did an interview with Victor Head, who is doing a gun recall, a gun grabber recall, a gun grabber politician recall in Colorado. Now, we're welcoming a station in Colorado today, KDGO in Durango, KDGO. And
KD Go.
Yeah. And we like that station. I'm actually going to visit Durango with my wife at some point. It looks really beautiful. And we are interviewing in the second hour. We're going to tease this coming up here. We're interviewing another Coloradan, and we're not just favoring a Colorado station. Basically, both of these things have very national implications. And Colorado is an interesting state because it's kind of a battleground state between red and blue, and it's got the old cowboys who like guns, and we like guns, and it's got the young hipsters who like weed, and we think weed should be legal. I don't smoke weed, but my daughter died of cancer in 2006, and she smoked pot at the advice of a doctor illegally to give her some comfort as she was doing chemo and as she was dying, and she was not even someone who ever smoked pot before that, and the thought that some politician could throw her in a cage just made me into a marijuana activist, which led me into being an everything activist. And we don't really see.
Well, I like to make the moral argument first. You know, I think that people own themselves, and so I think it's wrong for any outside or external group or organization to dictate forcefully what people put in their bodies. I think if people own themselves, if there's self ownership going on, then they make their own decisions. They have that freedom until they infringe on somebody else's freedom, and then it becomes a whole different ball game. But as long as you're taking care of yourself, then nobody can tell you what to do.
Yeah, and the hippies almost had it right. They said, hey man, anything's okay as long as it doesn't hurt anybody. But the hippies then got involved in politics and started hurting people by voting people to do their bidding. And that's something that happened in Colorado too, is two things that aren't really opposites were turned into opposites. I mean, some of the gun grabbers that are taking away gun rights in Colorado now got elected by promising to decriminalize or legalize pot. Here at the Freedom Fiends show, we like to point out that there's no such thing as half free, and you can't be single issue on one. I mean, I guess from a point of view of political activism, you can be single issue, but to be really an ethical and I talked to Victor Head before off, you know, he doesn't have any problem with the pot thing. He doesn't do it, but he did point out to me, and we didn't get a chance to ask him about that, that Yeah, that is, it works in politics against each other. And basically, politicians play stupid voters off of other stupid voters and make things single issue and make you have to choose between, you know, can my dying daughter have weed or should I be able to have a gun? And that really shouldn't have to be a choice. And politicians play people like sheep. And something we're going to extrapolate on tomorrow, too, is the fact that the Constitution was literally written on sheep. People often say that the U.S. Constitution is written on hemp paper. It is not. It was written on vellum or parchment, it's called, which is made from sheepskin. So the Constitution is literally written on sheep. So if you need any more argument that it was set up to create a federal government where they are in control, just remember, man, the Constitution was written on sheep. But we're going to play a little clip from Austin Martin, who is coming up in the next segment as an interview from our movie Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. And we filmed this in Colorado, went down from Wyoming when Nima lived here. And go ahead and set this clip up and play it, Nima.
Yep. Here's Austin giving the practical argument. I gave you all the moral argument. Here's a bit of the practical argument from Austin.
There's no longer the shady behind the back alley, hand a bag over, hand some cash over. Now it's open. We're here. We have three of our signature strains. This is all being raffled away the day before Halloween. So someone's going to have one of the best Halloweens of their life.
Six drug.
Now, interestingly, when we were trying to pick a clip before this, you suggested that. And I said, I don't know. That's kind of shock value-y. He's talking about like, yeah, we're having this big pot giveaway. But you pointed out, no, that's what legitimate businesses do. And it's only a shock value thing because people are used to it being illegal. And we will have an interview coming up with that man, Austin Martin, who is the head of one of the biggest marijuana dispensaries in Colorado, Karmaceuticals, coming up in the second hour of Freedom Fiends. So stick around. Right Nima?
And the correct. And the whole thesis of the Guns and Weed movie that we did make, it's called Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. Go ahead and watch it on YouTube or buy the DVD. But the whole thesis was that it's a false dichotomy. You don't have to choose between guns and weed. You have to choose freedom or no freedom. And if there's freedom, there can be both guns and weed. And so we'll talk more with Austin when we return.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Need to talk to people in a secure manner? Liberty Private Network sells phones that will work over any good internet connection and give you military-grade encryption for calls that cannot be tapped. Great for lawyers and clients, business people with trade secrets, or just ordinary folk who don't want their love talk spied on by some scumbag from the central scrutinizer. Call 516-TLK-SAFE on your non-secure phone and tell them the Freedom Fiends sent you. That's 516-TLK-SAFE.
All right, Freedom Fiends, thank you for sticking with us. It is the top of the second hour on June 22nd. I am Nima Vadadi representing Austin, Texas. We've also got Michael W. Dean there in Big Bone Lick State Park.
Yes.
How you doing, Michael?
This is Mr. Michael Dean in a rural mountain location in the state of Wyoming, the great state of Wyoming. I'm in Beast Lake. Right up the street from Beast Lick. Beast Lick is the town. Beast Lake is my neighborhood. And well,
it's a subdivision.
It's a salt lake. And, you know, there's a lot of salt formations. The antelope and deer come out and play, like in the song, and lick the salt lake. So it's Beast Lick, Wyoming. Yeah, and we were going to do an interview here. Do we have the interview ready, Dan?
It doesn't look like we do. He was going to message us when he does.
You know, so I got the gun guy was I got to make this joke. The gun guy was there, prompt, ready to go. The weed guy didn't answer his phone. Okay. I couldn't resist that one, but I did. And I said it. Yeah. I said it. So I got something to talk about for tomorrow. I have homework for tomorrow. It's not really homework. It's recommended viewing. Because we are going to have an extensive discussion tomorrow about the difference between a good conservative, a bad conservative, and why a good conservative is not the opposite of a good, hippie, liberal. And liberals are always bad. But I don't know. I don't want to use labels. But basically, there's this movie about G. Gordon Liddy and Timothy Leary. Now, what did you say when I mentioned those names, Nima?
I was like, yeah, I know who Dennis Leary is. He's that guy in Demolition Man. You're like, no. And then, I don't know what Timothy Leary is.
Yeah.
You're like, ugh, shakehead.
Yep. So we're going to go into this more tomorrow, but Timothy Leary was he's best known as an advocate of LSD during the 60s, but that's really limiting him to, you know, the shock headline. He was a lot more than that. He was a counterculture hero in the 60s. And G. Gordon Liddy was Richard Nixon's right-hand man. He was kind of associated with Nixon in the same way that Eric Holder is associated with Obama. G. Gordon Liddy was not the same position. He was not the head lawyer in the country like what's his name, but they're kind of thought of in the same way. He was kind of the henchman of Richard Nixon. And G. Gordon Liddy was, you know, basically symbolic of the establishment. And somebody had the brilliant idea in 1983 to put both of them on a speaking and debate tour together of college campuses. And hilarity ensued because, you know, they say conflict is the essence of drama. Fascinating right. documentary, though. And it's on the Freedom Fiends blog. It's linked. All four chapters of it are linked from YouTube. It's actually kind of hard to find if you just go on YouTube. It has an amazingly low number of views, like 150 views probably, which is really unbelievable that people don't know who these people are anymore. But it's called Return Engagement. And I'd highly recommend that Fiends listeners who are listening today and will listen tomorrow, go check out this whole movie, Return Engagement. We're going to basically talk about it for the whole episode tomorrow.
Yes.
And
yes. So go to Freedom Fiends blog and you can check it out. Right now, though, it looks like we've got our dispensary man. We've got Austin on. Austin, are you there?
I am.
How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good.
Oh, not too bad. It's been a while since we had talked, but I guess what I'm wondering is what's changed? You know, it was big news a few months ago when the legislature passed a law basically legalizing marijuana for recreational use. Has that affected your business yet? Has it affected the people, you know, the populace in Colorado yet? What are you seeing there on the ground in Colorado?
Well, directly, it has not quite affected us. All the laws go through January 1st, and that's when you'll start seeing recreational shops open where anyone with an ID over 21 will be able to go in and purchase up to a quarter ounce of marijuana. But adversely, we are being affected because a lot of people are still purchasing from other patients on the street. Now that anyone in Colorado can carry up to an ounce at a time legally, we're starting to see more people openly carrying that around and purchasing it through other patients, which then directly come to our dispensary and purchase it from us.
Ah, I see. So you still have this sort of gray area where things like that are happening. Is it becoming more restrictive for you as a medical marijuana dispensary? Are people keeping a closer eye on you, or are government officials, police officers keeping a closer eye on you?
You know, we haven't really noticed that. Of course, they always have their eye on us, and we don't know exactly when they're watching. But I haven't noticed a whole lot of extra heat, if you might say, at this point in time.
Okay. Now, when California, I think it was a year or two back, had a proposition to basically do what Colorado actually did do and make recreational marijuana a thing, a lot of people were saying the dispensaries, the medical marijuana dispensaries, were against it, and they were part of the lobbying group fighting against recreational marijuana. Where do you come down on that? How do you feel about recreational marijuana dispensaries opening up? Do you view it as friendly competition, you know, a free market kind of thing, or do you view it as people encroaching on your turf?
Well, from the business side of things, we plan on being part of that and having a recreational shop as well. In essence, it's opening up demand and increasing demand for business owners, which is always a good thing.
Do you have to keep them separate?
As my political side, I'm also for it. I believe that marijuana, I mean, it's just a natural plant. Anyone should be able to do whatever they want with it. If cigarettes with all their poisons are legal, I don't see why marijuana is illegal. I'm looking forward to recreational marijuana.
Do you have to keep the
business side as well as on my personal side?
Do you have to keep the building separate, or can you do it from the same facility legally?
They haven't quite finalized that, but what it sounds like is we will have to maybe do a partition in our building and have like unit A and unit B, and have one unit be for recreational, one unit for medical.
That is so square, man. Government's regulations. I mean, that's a lot of the absurdity of regulations is coming out with this. Like, I know in Washington State, they're trying to retrain pot sniffing dogs to not sniff pot and only sniff other drugs or bombs. And they're actually just having to retire some of the dogs. I mean, it's absurd. You actually have described yourself, I saw somewhere, I was Facebook or something, you described yourself as a conservative. Do you still feel that way?
For the most part, I'm definitely fiscally conservative. As far as social issues, I tend to stay out of politics, but as far as social issues such as this, it's a little more liberal, probably somewhat in the independent zone. But definitely fiscally and financially, I'm more on the conservative side.
How is the gun rights battle in Colorado playing over into the pot rights battle? Because I know that some of the politicians that they're trying to recall were some of the politicians who pushed for pot to be legalized, but now they're pushing for guns to be outlawed. How is that working on the ground there?
Well, it used to be, I remember when it first came out that it was a big deal that you couldn't have your medical marijuana card as well as a gun. We had lots of patients that we lost that decided just to go black market. They were like, they wanted their guns, their big gun rights. In Colorado, guns are kind of a bigger deal than in some other states. But nowadays that it's recreational legal, anyone can have marijuana and you don't have to have a card. And so I think a lot more people are opening up to getting their concealed permits and carrying guns, as well as having it just on the outside the grid, having their marijuana, since they don't have to purchase it through a dispensary anymore.
So if you guys do end up being, you know, partitioned, and you have your medical marijuana side and you also have your recreational marijuana side, do you think that the recreational one will get bigger and be more successful? I mean, I guess what I'm asking is, do you think there are a lot of people that, you know, tried hard to get a card just so they could do something that they were going to do anyway, and now that they don't have to have that special card, that permission slip anymore, they won't go renew it or won't think of it as something they need anymore?
I think how it's going to play out is the people who, I think more Colorado residents and people who currently have cards are going to keep them, because the big difference is you're opening up with recreational, you're opening up the demand to virtually the world, anyone over 21, and a lot of tourists are going to come in.
Yeah. Is that legal?
High demand means high prices.
Is that legal?
People are going to be able to charge more.
Is it legal for people?
Medical side, you're going to be able to keep the lower demand, lower prices as they are now, you know, the $20, $25 eights, versus when you open it up to anyone in Kansas can come over and purchase, or anyone in Utah, anyone, you know, anyone anywhere can come in. I feel like recreational prices are going to go through the roof. And a lot of the Colorado patients who use it a lot and aren't just on vacation are going to get the card so that they can stay with the low prices and actually use the medical healing benefits of it.
Yeah,
sort of as a distinction between themselves and the visitors. And I guess what Michael's trying to ask is how does it
tourism
work for visitors? It's slightly different for tourists, isn't it? They have more restrictions on what they can buy, how much they can buy, stuff like that.
It looks like, of course, they don't finalize everything. I think July 1st is when they finally have to have all the laws set. But it looks like tourists are only going to be able to purchase a quarter ounce, which is another kind of loophole, which means they can go purchase it in the morning, and then go to another dispensary and purchase a quarter ounce, and then go to another dispensary, and then they can hit those three dispensaries again later on in the day to purchase as much as they need.
Is it July 1st that this becomes legal across the board there?
January 1st is when recreational shops will open. July 1st is when they have to have the law finalized. They have to have it all in writing, what the law is going to be, what the process is going to be. And then the current medical marijuana centers are going to have the option from, I'm pretty sure it's July 1st till September or October 1st to apply for the licenses. And then after that, there's a moratorium for either 1 year or 2 year. They have not decided that yet either, as far as I know. And then January 1st is when licenses will be issued and recreational shops will be opened.
All right. Nima?
So, I guess I want to know, too, what was it like? You know, this is sort of an event that people have been predicting for decades and hoping will happen for decades, the opening up, the decriminalization of pot. You know, hippies in the 60s and 70s and people in pop culture like, oh, it'll be legal one day, man, and we're just waiting for that day. What was it like being there in Colorado when that news hit? Was there a big celebration? Were people, like, joyous in the streets? Did they light up blunts? I mean, what happened?
It was huge. To be honest, I think more people were interested in if pot was going to be legal than who the president was going to be. And if you look at the stats, a funny stat actually, is more people in Colorado voted on the issue of the legalization of marijuana than they voted for the president.
Is Obama still going after?
Downtown, I know, went crazy. Everyone was pretty excited. And I know there were lots and lots of joints lit in honor of the law passing.
Sounds like the fall of the Berlin Wall to me. Is Obama still kicking in doors of dispensaries there, sending people to do that? What are the feds doing about this?
So in Colorado, they've been way more lenient than in California. There haven't been a whole lot of raids. They did send out letters about a year ago.
We're gonna carry over the break and have you back here over the break. We're gonna go to the market right now.
We're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
All right, welcome back, Freedom Fiends. I'm Nima Vedati. This is our live Saturday show on June 22nd. We've also got Mr. Michael W. Dean. How are you doing today, Michael?
Good.
Good, excellent. Well, we've also got another special guest. This is the Guns and Weed episode of the Freedom Fiends podcast. You know, and here in Colorado, or there in Colorado, I should say, we talked to a gun guy, Victor Head. Now we're talking to the owner of Karmaceuticals, which is a pot dispensary in Denver, saying he's going to branch out and they're going to also do recreational marijuana. At least that's the plan. And Austin, before we got interrupted by the hard break there, we were asking you, What do you think the Fed's response is going to be to this? You were saying it's a little bit heavier handed in California. Do you think it's going to get worse in Colorado, or do you think this is a big step into the Fed's dropping the issue completely someday?
You know, I mean, of course, I'm a bit hopeful, but I'm hoping that that'll be the end of the federal government involvement. Every year, every couple years, we see more and more states doing medical marijuana. We now have two states that have full legalization, and eventually it's just going to be way too expensive and way too much of a hassle for them to come interfere. The good thing about Colorado is we have a huge statute. I mean, I think we have about four laws, probably 250 pages total, governing it. So the federal government can see exactly what's going on. Another good part is, I mean, just recently, actually, even last week, they some of the illegal operations are getting caught, which is important that the federal government sees that the color state government can find out who's laundering money, who's, you know, racketeering and all these other things that everyone's worried about as is. And as long as, you know, the bad apples get weeded out, pardon the pun, I think it's going to be great for the future, and that the federal government will finally, you know, kind of let us run our thing how we're doing it. And as in the past, the biggest thing they've really done, the federal government, is issue letters for people that were within 1,000 feet of schools who had been grandfathered in Colorado law, but the federal law, they came in and told them to leave. And that's almost all that they have done. There have been a few raids, but those were because of the bad apples who had been later on found charges of selling overstate, selling to Mexico, all sorts of illegal things like that. So I guess I'm hoping that this legalization will stay fit and the federal government will keep out and let us run our state how we want to.
I knew a guy, and it was his plan to move to Colorado and start a dispensary, or actually take over a dispensary that already existed. And in the end, he sort of threw his hands up in the air and gave up because there were so many regulations, things he had to comply with, so many different fees and taxes and permitting processes and things like that he had to go through. Give us a brief overview of all the things you have to do if you can keep it quick. And then is it going to be the same case for the recreational stuff? Is it going to be just as onerous, or is it a little bit easier, do you think, to do a recreational one?
So I guess we'll go over some of the things you have to have. I think to date we have spent nearly $75,000 on fees just for the medical marijuana license. It's a little bit less expensive now, but we've been doing it for 3 years now. You have to have the license for the center, license for the grow. You have to have like a food retail license, retail sacks, all the normal business stuff. You get inspected all the time. There's like 3 different inspection cards we have to go through. Security is atrocious. Every room has at least 1 to 4 to 5 cameras, depending on if you're growing in there. And you have to have everything on site has to be recorded with a big giant hard drive for 40 days after it happens. And Medical Marijuana Enforcement Division can come in at any time and say, hey, 37 days ago, I need to see what happened in this room. And if you don't show it, you will be close to getting shut down.
Wow. Is it the same game for the recreational departments once those – or, I mean, I guess you guys are still waiting on that.
I think the recreational is going to be about the same. It might be a little bit more stringent, but I do know that they are offering licenses to people who currently have their medical marijuana license first. So those are the people that have already been approved and already gone through all the hoops and jumps that they've required. So I think the next step to recreational is going to be minimal, at least for us. Entries into the market, I think, are going to have to go through even more than what we've done in order to open up a shop.
Okay. Now, before we had you on in the last segment, before we introduced you, we played a clip of you in our movie Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, where you sort of outlined the point of the practical argument for marijuana decriminalization and legalization in that, you know, it's all here out in the open. You don't have to worry about the black market stuff. Have you guys seen that in real life there in Colorado? Is there less black market marijuana dealings? Is there anything to point to say that? And if not, do you think the recreational push will end the black market? Just give us a yes or no, I guess.
Yeah, I would
that
say
one.
Actually, right now, currently, the black market is smaller than it was 2 or 3 years ago. It's simply
okay.
Just
we'll just
demand.
Stick with that because we got to go to break here. We really
for $25-$30. There's no reason to go to the.
Well, we really appreciate your time, Austin. But we actually got to go.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back just as soon as this drone is out of range.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean. Available on Amazon. Your house is your property.
Freedom Fiends.
Yeah, it's the Freedom Fiends live on the 22nd of June, Saturday live show, and I'm Nima Vedati, coming straight out of Austin, Texas, through the intertubes to Michael's house, and then to the satellites, and then to the radio stations. How you doing, Mr. Dean?
Yeah, I've debated like actually telling people we're doing this from our house, because to some people it sounds amateur, and I kind of want to pretend we're in a windowless bunker or a studio, but actually, the way most radio is done these days is from people's houses, because the technology's gotten so good. And we'll actually expand on that at some point, of what it used to take to do a remote radio show. I mean, originally, syndication was done by pressing acetate records of shows and mailing them through the U.S. mail. An acetate record was basically a really cheap way to do, like, you know, if you only had to do like 50 copies of a vinyl record, you'd press it on acetate.
That was only going to be played once.
Right. Yeah. You can only play them like 5 or 10 times before they completely degrade. But they would do a radio show, you know, in the 30s and 40s. They would do a radio show and press it to acetate and mail it. And a week later, the stations would get it and play it. And that's how syndication worked. And then it worked with dedicated satellite lines, which are really expensive. And then it worked with ISDN lines, which were where you'd get 2 or 3 phone lines and have your local phone company come over and put in about $2,000 worth of equipment and tweak it and set it up for you. And then you'd have to basically hire someone to maintain it. And there are actually still hosts doing that. I saw Dave Ramsey, if anyone lives in Tennessee and knows how to run ISDN equipment and boards, he says he's looking for a board op, but, you know, an in-house, like in his home, board op, like he's that successful. I'd love that. I love our board ops at GCN, but I just like the idea of having, like, you know, people that I pay in my home being that successful. So, but now it's done.
Well,
with
each of us has a home studio that we've all got set up with all the equipment we need to get our voice to the actual studio at GCN. And GCN has all, you know, it is the old school, not old school, but has all the stuff you would think
big
would
school.
Be in a radio station.
Yeah. I mean, they have like, it's like NASA there at GCN. Whereas, our home studios are pretty nice for home studios, but they are not like NASA. You know, we probably have about $5,000. I have about $5,000 worth of equipment at my end, and you got about $2,000-$2,500 worth of equipment at your end. And you can do a radio show and sound pretty darn good these days. We connect to each other using a little utility called Audio Compass, which is $200 per license, and we had to get 2 of them. And that's how we talk to each other, and that's how Nima sounds like he's in the same room with me. And the way we get to GCN is through a device called a Comrex, which costs about $1,500, which sends you over the internet. I mean, I guess an analogy would be it's kind of like Skype, except the government's not necessarily listening, although they're listening to the satellites these days. They are. They said, you know, I mean, if we thought maybe we were being listened to when we were doing this as a podcast for 2 years and a streaming radio show, now that we're on radio, we're absolutely being listened to, because the government has said we are listening to actively, like with a person, not just a machine recording it, but a person listening to every talk radio show in the country. So hello to the central scrutinizer. I hope you're enjoying your stolen government money in your little sub basement spying on people. Man, get a real job. Go out and sell incense or work at a medical marijuana dispensary or something.
There you go. Yes. You'd be doing more good for society if you were in Colorado working for Austin at Pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, or working for Victor Head, helping stop the gun grabbers in Colorado. Yep. So that's our little bit on the technology of how this works. So we want to talk a little bit about what we're going to do tomorrow. And I mentioned before this movie, Return Engagement, that's on the YouTubes. It's about an hour and a half long. It's a full-length documentary. So if you go to freedomfiends.com, that's the word freedom, and then the second word is fiends, which is Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra, F-E-E-N-S. So F-R-E-E-D-O-M-F-E-E-N-S, Freedom Fiends, and a fiend is a fiend, basically. Go to freedomfiends.com, and over on the right is a little link that says Fiends Blog, and it's got a picture of a kitty cat at a laptop computer. If you click on that, the top link, or maybe if somebody else posts one today, the second top link is about the movie Return Engagement with Timothy Leary and G. Gordon Liddy. And I would encourage fiends to go out and watch that whole thing tonight. It's a fascinating movie, and it's a countercultural icon from the 60s and a cult, the man, the establishment icon from the 60s,
yeah,
touring together college campuses doing a spoken word tour. And it's also them interacting off stage, having breakfast together, having dinner together. It is a really good movie to give you an inkling if you're young and don't remember and know who these people are, or if you were around and remember, to refresh your memory and give you more information. It's a really good, truthful documentary to explain a little bit of how we got from the 60s to now. And we're going to talk tomorrow about it and talk about what makes a good conservative and what makes a horrible conservative. Now, G. Gordon Liddy is considered by many to be a good conservative. I mean, he had a radio show. He just retired at the age 80-something last year, and we actually took his place on a couple stations, which is kind of cool to me because the guy was, I don't think he was a good conservative, because he wanted to rule everybody and tell everyone what to do and not give anyone individual liberty while talking about the power of individual liberty at the same time. And that's not good conservatism. And I will say this, mm-hmm, anybody who's a conservative who listened to him and liked him, who liked the G. Gordon Liddy show, because he is pretty funny and pretty smart. He is very smart. And he's got a good voice, and he's got a, you said he has a radio, a mustache for radio, but, he
does.
He really.
Yeah. I thought it was Burt Reynolds at first when I saw the YouTube thumbnail. I was like, is that Burt Reynolds? Yeah.
But, you know, if you're a conservative who liked him, but you're also upset about the revelation that isn't really a revelation, that the government is spying on everything you do, phone call and internet wise, that's a contradiction and a disconnect, because G. Gordon Liddy, his actions in the 60s are one of the reasons the government is spying on you 24/7. So there.
Right. See, back then he used to have to break into journalist's house that the government didn't like. He would do that. That's one of the things he did.
Yeah,
part of his job description. These days the state doesn't have to do that. They can just tap the phones of the AP journalist or whatever they want to do.
Yep, he did it. He did it back when you had to be manly and actually break into somewhere. He actually brags in this movie. Yeah. He's hanging out with some outlaw bikers at one point in the movie.
Some bikers.
Yeah, and one
really
of them
weird.
One of them
was that a thing? Was that a dichotomy, Michael? Because before that, it's like Timothy Leary with a bunch of hippies out in a field by the coast talking about like free love and stuff, and then to contrast it, the next scene is G. Gordon Liddy riding up on a motorcycle with a bunch of bikers with beards.
I think that was at the same location. I really do. I think it was the bikers didn't want to hang out with the hippies, and Leary was hanging out with the hippies, and Liddy went over to hang out with the bikers. But he was talking to one of the bikers who'd been to jail for burglary, and the biker was saying, I wish I had your batting average, Liddy, with breaking into places, because I got caught. Although Liddy got caught too, but then he did some prison time, but then he got pardoned by Carter, wasn't it? Jimmy Carter? I think so.
Was it? I don't know, because there's another moment when he's saying he wouldn't have done the Watergate break-ins for Carter,
yeah,
but he would have done some other break-in he did for Carter.
He also said he thought John Dean should do the right thing and put his pistol in his mouth. John Dean, no relation to me, was the guy that was involved in the break-ins who narked everybody else out and didn't do a lot of prison time. Yeah.
But regardless of all that, it's an amazing watch. You know, I don't really remember the 60s. I wasn't born yet, and I haven't really read enough history about it. Like Michael said earlier, I didn't even know who Timothy Leary was. But it's amazing to see these old ideas and then sort of track their lineage. You know, you kind of have to know your history to know what the future is and what the present is. And I think this is a really good way to do that as far as ideas of how society should be organized go. Because at one point, Leary talks about all the different voluntary organizations and how they're good and how he likes them. He gets a few things wrong, but then he says, you know, the one thing that is involuntary is the modern state, you know, and that's kind of what we talk about almost every day.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know that that was even talked about in mainstream media or culture.
He was cutting edge with that, and that was kind of blowing some minds. And to put him in a cultural place that people can understand now, Leary was a much bigger household name in the 60s than Julian Assange is now. I mean, a lot of people know who Julian Assange is now and a lot of Liberty people. And he kind of had a similar place of being a hero to a lot of cool people and a villain to a lot of bad people. G. Gordon Liddy had a similar place in society to Eric Holder now in people's minds as the enemy and the good guy, except it was flipped Republican to Democrat. But right. There really isn't that much difference because the Democrats are using what Liddy helped set up in the 60s to spy on everybody now. And, you know, I mean, is the NSA Republican or Democrat? It's bipartisan, man. They don't care who the president is.
Yeah.
They don't even listen to him. Well, they listen to him.
They listen to his conversations.
The NSA is the only part of the government that actually listens to everybody and what they have to say when they say it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So go out and watch the movie Return Engagement, the 1983 documentary that is linked on the Freedom Fiends blog in all four segments. You know, there was a place in there where he's talking to, I think it's a bunch of high school kids, because at one point they say something about, well, we're all 17 and that wouldn't be college. And they had each guy come in and talk to them. And there was a discussion among the kids, and those kids are the exact age I am now. When that movie was made, those kids were the age I am. So that's my generation exactly. And they were complaining like, well, I don't think Leary and Liddy are out, you know, trying to spread any message. I think they're just trying to make money. And one brave little girl who I really liked said, does it matter? Why can't they do both? Did you see that part?
Nice. No, yeah. I didn't. I watched about half of it, but I'm going to watch the whole thing tonight. I will accept your homework challenge, Michael, because I think it is important. You know, when you were first rattling on about it, you're like, oh, some movie about the 60s, man. I don't want to waste my time. But like I said, there are some it's important to track the lineages of different ideologies and see what got us here today.
Yeah, and I don't think Liddy comes in until the second part of that. I think the first part is all Leary. It's made by a Leary fan. And you said you really liked the journalist lady asking the questions, and nobody asked questions like her anymore.
Yeah, what was she? Was she the filmmaker, or was she... Who was she?
No, but she was part of the filmmaking process. I think she was a journalist at the time that he picked because she asked tough questions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was good stuff, but we don't want to tease it too much, or, you know, we want you to watch it, and then we'll talk about it tomorrow when we get to it. But yeah, I do think it is really important.
Yep. And anybody watching Shepard Smith? He's been really good lately about challenging the state and its spying. And I liked something he said the other day.
Really?
You know? Yeah, I don't usually like him, but he said, you know, I want Fox to have news drones. CNN doesn't have news drones. Fox should get news drones. It's pretty funny. We'll be back for Tweak and Review after this.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. That proves you're smarter than most people.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a torrent club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Yo, it's the Freedom Fiends. It's Nima V, and we've also got Michael Dean.
Hello.
It is the end of our time here. This is our last segment. It was, or I guess it still is, Saturday, June 22nd. And we're going to go ahead and go right into the Fiends Tweak in Review. This is the point in the show where we sort of go over the concepts we talked about to sort of bring it all together. And the first one I've got for you, recalling politicians as a strategy. So we talked to Victor Head out there in Colorado, who's doing a lot of footwork, legwork, groundwork, whatever you want to call it, to try to get these politicians, these gun grabbers in the legislature, recalled. And basically that means there would be either they could step down voluntarily for the recall, in which case the party would then appoint somebody, or there would be another election, an open election, where anybody could be a part of it. And I just wondering, you know, how good of a strategy is that? You know, we're not really big fans of the political process, and it seems like a lot of it is rigged, and the people who claim to represent us don't really represent us, and there's a lot of false choices, you know, between left and right, and party politician A versus party politician B. But what would happen if everybody just recalled all the politicians all the time? Because that's what it's for. It's for when you don't feel they represent you. I can't think of any politician out there these days on the state or federal level that really represents everybody. There's always one group of people, one subset of people that just detest whoever their representative is.
Well, so, Ron Paul was close, but he did the smart thing and stepped aside from politics and became just a philosopher and radio show host, as he should be.
Right, homeschool, right. But a lot of libertarians teacher. Are fond of saying, you know, it's a good thing when there's gridlock. It's a good thing when there's not a lot of bipartisanship in Congress and there's gridlock and they can't get anything done. I wonder if that'd be the same effect if people just – if that was the thing. Let's all recall politicians all the time, and then they'll be so busy dealing with the recall, they won't have any time to pass new laws. Just a thought.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that's a strategy, because they would just change the laws of how you recall people. They only let you do
recall.
That. They only let you do that once. It's like Ron Paul almost got on the ballot. You know, he was in the running, and then the Republicans changed the rules so you could never have another Ron Paul.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. All right. Well, up next. The market, companies moving out of Colorado. That's another way, another strategy. If you've got a gun company or you live in Colorado and you don't like the gun culture, the gun grabbiness of those politicians, you can just move out. That's great. It's a good thing to do. But it's not so much the market to ask other states and other cities to give you a bunch of bribe money to move there. We talked about, I think, is Hi-Viz, a company that wants to move to Laramie and is asking for $2.5 million as a grant. You know, the appropriate thing to do would be to ask for tax breaks to the same effect. You still don't have to pay that money. You know, you can use that for your customers to make your product better. But instead of asking for other people's stolen money, you're just asking that less money is stolen from you. That way, you get your cake and eat it too. You're still following the non-aggression principle at the same time that you get your benefit for moving to a freer state. Next up, could Colorado marijuana legalization mean the end of federal law enforcement? I guess we'll see, but that seemed to be the take from Austin, the guy who owns Karmaceuticals and is one of the stars of our movie Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. You know, he points to the fact that because Colorado already has state regulations that assuage or Assange, as Michael joked the other day, a lot of the fears of the federal law enforcers, maybe that means that the feds will be less likely to come down on them when it's time to have recreational marijuana. He pointed to California as the opposite of that. In California, you're getting a lot more raids with Obama. So will Colorado's spearhead end up meaning more marijuana freedom and eventually more drug freedom in general, maybe an end of the drug war? Who knows? But that's one of the things Austin brought up. And lastly, we do encourage you to watch G. Gordon Liddy versus Timothy Leary in a movie that I can't recall the name to. Michael, what was the name of it?
Something engagement. Return engagement.
Return engagement.
It's on it's on YouTube. You can go to the Freedom Fiends blog and click on the link and watch it. And you forgot one important thing, Nima. The Constitution is written. The Constitution is written on sheep. On actual sheepskin. It's written on sheep.
Yes.
Freedom Fiends. So we'll be back tomorrow on the Freedom Fiends with Nima V.
Yes, thank you so
and
much.
And Michael Dean. Yeah.
For listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Make an appointment to listen while it's still legal.
Learn more about the Fiends and download archived shows at freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
A little over a year ago, I'm